The following podcast will contain spoilers, tangents, hot takes, and excessive foul language. Viewer discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 250 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me across the table from Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep is my wife, Gabrielle Platt Proctor.
What?
Yes, hello.
Hello. What were you saying? Three fifty?
Yeah.
No, not yet.
250?
250. Yeah, 250. We're a quarter of the way to 1,000.
Oh, so we'll get there any day now.
5 years later, so in 15 years, we'll have
15
hit
years.
Episode 1,000. Yeah. I've got the show planned out for a long time, but not that long. That's a long time.
Next year's when you do all my suggestions, right?
I haven't decided yet.
I swear to God, I'll quit.
Okay, whatever. You gave me one for next year, and then I riffed an entire year.
I actually gave you several, and I still have the receipts, bitch. I gave you 8 months, so.
No, you did not.
I did. Here they are.
Let me see which ones I'm actually using. I said Mia Gottober.
So did I.
You've given me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You gave me 6.
I worked hard on that, you son of a bitch. Use my ideas.
Yeah, I wanted to go next year.
No.
I don't like most of the movies that I picked for next year because I was trying to go after this year. Like we're doing some big names this year, but I wanted to go like all big names, just so that way people will be like, oh, I know, you know, because like if you do the niche shit, nobody fucking listens. So I'm trying to do the big name stuff here.
Yes, and that's why I said focus on actors, because people like certain actors. So if you focus on them.
What happens if they don't like William Dafoe? Willem Dafoe.
Willem to go fuck yourself.
Willem Dafobuary. That's.
Come on. It's a great chance for us to discuss the merits of the actors.
I had to put off everything because you had to shoehorn your way in.
Because I'm brilliant.
Yeah, I filled in the other 6 months, and I did this entire year, so I don't want to hear it.
Speaking of me being brilliant.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Here we fucking go.
Fine, you say it.
No, go ahead. You fucking stupid thing.
Fine, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Bullshit. That's all you talk about every day of the week, 24/7.
That is wildly false.
That is not false.
It is mostly wildly false. Somewhat wildly false. Yeah, we're going to work on a short film. So that's exciting. A short horror movie. The first under the Frightmares production company that doesn't yet exist.
Yay! Can you talk louder, please? Just a little bit. We always whisper. Don't yell.
Oh.
That's it?
That's it!
Bullshit!
Okay, fine. It is called Dust Bunnies, not to be confused with the film coming out with Mads Mikkelsen and Sigourney Weaver called Dust Bunny.
You got your idea from that movie because it's not anything how it's described as we wanted it to be, so you're gonna...
Yeah, like you name a movie Dust Bunny and there's not one Dust Bunny in it?
Yeah,
what the hell?
Kind of weird.
Yeah, so
just like long legs. There better be a pair of long legs in that movie, because if there's not, I'm gonna be.
These are some real short bastards.
I'm gonna be pissed.
Yeah,
male, female, I don't care. I better see someone with some nice long legs.
Yeah, and some short shorts.
Or spiders, a bunch of spiders.
Spiders.
Because then, yeah.
Yeah, so we're gonna make a little film. I'm just gonna, you know, with some dust bunnies. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be something.
Look, we have a great team together. We've got special effects people. We've got people with sewing machines, people with better grammar than me. We got cameras, and we've got the material to make puppets. What else do we need?
Kind of a big thing to have cameras. Kind of the biggest thing. We got all this shit, no cameras. All right, cool.
Hey, they filmed Unsane on an iPhone. We'll not saying it can't be done. I'm saying we can try a little harder.
Yeah.
I mean, except that I think was the point of that one.
Oh, my goodness. All right. That was a really great preamble there.
Yep.
That does usually doesn't happen.
Stay tuned for more news on dust bunnies. Okay, good.
This is really good.
Good.
I think I'm just going to start getting Frappuccinos now because A, they are always cold. I mean, I guess the iced coffee is always cold too.
It does have ice in it.
And they have a lot of ice. But there's no ice in this fucking... I mean, there's crushed up ice, obviously. I know they crush... But I'm saying there's... you get so much more value for your drink. What?
I like the hand gesture you did. Heavily implied that they're crushing the ice by hand.
No,
I not mean, that you're just like... They're crushing the ice.
No, that wasn't for crushing. That was just... That was me doing... No,
it just looks like you're like... Yeah, and they're like punching that ice into smaller pieces.
It was for you get more... You get more. I was not karate.
Fuck blenders. We've got fists.
I wasn't karate chopping the ice. I'm saying you get fucking whatever. Let's go to Flanagan facts here. God damn
just
it!
Like, they have a little hand. Just one person. There's blood everywhere. Just like my hand's so raw. Don't they make machines for this?
Oh my god! That's not what I was saying. This is just a better. Better bargain for your buck. Yeah. Welcome back to March Flanagan, which is the theme for this month, where we're reviewing all things directed by the man himself. I've got some Flanagan facts here for you. So on the tails of Oculus, Flanagan shot his next film, Before I Awake, in 2013. It was acquired by Relative Media in 2014 and was originally scheduled for release on May 8th, 2015, but got pushed back to September 25th, 2015, and later pulled from the schedule entirely when the company filed for bankruptcy.
Bummer.
After a year in bankruptcy court, Relative Media announced that Before I Awake would be released in theaters April 8th, 2016, but missed that date as the company struggled to get back on its feet. So this movie has been just hanging in the balance for 3 years at this point. The film was then scheduled for September 9th, 2016, but Relative once again pulled the film 3 weeks ahead of its date, prompting a public argument between Flanagan and Relative CEO Ryan Kavanaugh on Twitter. Kavanaugh claimed September 9th was a bad date, while Flanagan suggested that Relative Media was financially unable to release the film. Relative never released the film, as Kavanaugh sold the company to a Singapore social network company, Yuzu, in October 2016, with Netflix eventually acquiring the rights to the film and releasing it in January of 2018.
Talk about a slow play.
5 fucking years. That movie was done for 5 years.
And in all that time, I only got 24 followers.
Well, it's no wonder that one was, to me, it wasn't as strong as some of his other stuff, which came out around the same time. Because, like, you had Ouija Origin of Evil, you had Hush, you had Gerald's Game, all come out around the same time. And those are pretty equal in their, you know, how they, and then this one came out. And I was like, it's good. Like, it's a good movie, but it's like, it's definitely not as strong as some of the other stuff. And of course, Hill House was 2018, too, so.
Well, yeah, and I think some of the earlier stuff, you know, he's still finding that specific voice he has. Like, while we were watching Dr. Sleep, we were literally discussing how he has very specific tones to his film. Like, I think I watched Oculus with you, and it's like, those blue-greens come in all of his films, so when you're watching them, you know you're watching a Mike Flanagan film. And that the kind grays. Of, those desaturated blues and greens that somehow feel really rich.
Yeah.
He has this voice and he has this color palette. It's like, why can't I think of his name?
Wes Craven.
Thank you. No, oh. Wes Anderson.
Oh, I was like, damn.
You are halfway there.
Did I nail that?
Wes Anderson. When you're watching a Wes Anderson movie, you fucking know you're watching a Wes Anderson movie.
It's pretty obvious.
It's very obvious. And
it's use of miniatures alone.
Yeah, and the color, the stylistic choices. And that's something I think Mike Flanagan has worked really hard to cultivate, and it reads really well. But some of his earlier stuff, you can still see where he's trying to work that out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, even in Oculus. In 2018, Flanagan created, wrote, directed, produced, and edited the Netflix supernatural horror series The Haunting of Hill House, based on Shirley Jackson's novel of the same name. 2019, he did the movie we're talking about today, Dr. Sleep, based on the novel of the same name by Stephen King, itself the sequel to his previous novel, The Shining. In February 2019, The Haunting of Hill House was renewed for a standalone second season titled The Haunting of Bly Manor, based on the novel The Turn of the Screw by Henry James. It premiered in 2020. Around the same time, it was announced that Flanagan had joined frequent collaborator Trevor Macy as a partner in Intrepid Pictures, and the duo had signed an exclusive overall deal with Netflix to produce television content. As we all know,
that didn't set it work. A million. You
know, well, no, I mean, it worked for a while, but it, you know, he's going to Amazon now, as I've said a million times on the show.
Yeah. A
couple times. My nose is stuffy and I'm finding it very hard to breathe right now, so sorry if I sound out of breath. My nose is
That's
so
Austin. Sad. I didn't do that.
It's the dust bunny.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, they just do that breathy. Yeah, that. It's like a tractor beam. Supersonic tractor beam. Oh, boy. What are we? Oh, well, let's move on to the IMDb roundup. No, you don't do it. Don't. IMDb roundup. You're the worst. Let it do its thing. That's what it's there for. IMDb. It's dusty in here.
You got the black lung pop.
Fuck it. Fuck it.
Please leave all that in there.
I'm going to. So we are watching Dr. Sleep from 2019, released on November 8th of that year in the U.S. Of course, we've seen this. Every time we watch The Shining, we watch this. And sometimes we don't even watch The Shining and we watch this. So.
And sometimes we watch The Shining and not this.
Those are all the options.
So not every time we watch The Shining, we watch this.
Whatever. Loosely
sometimes
interpreted.
We do a combination of the three options.
Yeah, the only three options. Or not watch them at all.
So there's a fourth option.
Rated R for disturbing and violent content, some bloody images, language, nudity, and drug use. Who's fucking nudity in this? Who's nudity? Who's nude in... Oh, the old lady in the tub. Yeah. Ah, there it is.
I was like, is the old lady in there?
We've got mild sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, moderate profanity, moderate alcohol, drugs and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes. Coming in at 2 hours and 32 minutes, or 3 hours if you watch the director's cut, which we did, and I have some key differences that I'll talk about later.
Groovy.
Listed as a drama, fantasy, horror thriller, directed by Mike Flanagan, written by Mike Flanagan, composed by the Newton Brothers, who, like I said on last episode, after Oculus, they did everything that Mike Flanagan has done, all the way up to The Fall of the House of Usher, and they also did Five Nights at Freddy's. Cinematography by Michael Fibignari. I finally learned how to say his name on the third episode out of four, which is perfect. And, you know, Before I Wake, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Gerald's Game, yada yada, all the shows. He pretty much works with the same people, which is probably why all his shit is so fucking consistent.
Okay, so you're saying if we make a short film, we then have to permanently hire the people on this film to make all of our future films too?
Pretty much, yeah. You got to work with the same, unless they suck, then you got to find new people. So you got to just find good people.
All right, I'll let Will know where the bar's at.
Yeah, you got to find good people right out of the gate, apparently.
Yeah.
Because that's what Flanagan did. Talk about a cast. Let me tell you about them. Starring Ewan McGregor as Dan Torrance, probably most notably as Obi-Wan Kenobi from the first trilogy of Star Wars movies that were so much fun as a kid, but fucking suck so much. Oh my God, so much ass. Especially after you watch the explain thing that guy does.
Oh, Red Letter Media, the Plinkett Review.
God, those movies are actually fucking horrible.
I mean, if you so just bad. Go into them complete, no.
No. They're good Star Wars movies. Like, when you think about it. Pod racing, the dueling light.
They're fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're, like, good fun. But when you break them down on an actual,
like, if you actually think about the story stuff.
Like a critically, you know, they're shit. They're absolute shit.
But the Plinkett reviews are super fun to watch.
Those are great. Should watch those again sometime soon. What's wrong with your face? he's also in Moulin Rouge as Christian and Trainspotting as Renton.
I've seen both of those.
Really like. Oh, and he's also in Big Fish as Herbifler, sir guy.
Ah, yes. Who could forget?
Who could forget, lest we forget?
He's been in so many things. Yeah, he's been in a lot. I love his beautiful little face. Just boop, boop.
Okay. Good to know. I love Rebecca Ferguson's beautiful face. Toot toot, whatever you did.
Toot
toot. Toot toot, motherfucker.
Can I get a little toot toot?
No. As she plays Rose the Hat, she was also in The Greatest Showman as Jenny Lind. We've got Kylie Curran as Abra Stone, who was also in The Fall of the House of Usher as Lenore.
The Light.
Then we've got Cliff Curtis as Billy Freeman, who was also in Sunshine as Searle. We've got Zan McLarnon as Crow Daddy, who was also in Gerald's Game as the Moonlight Man. And also,
nope, you popped down a line.
Oh, he was in Bone Tomahawk.
He's definitely not the Moonlight
Man.
Oh,
that's Crow Daddy. That's not Grandpa Flick. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's Grandpa Flick was the Moonlight Man from Gerald's Game. Sorry, everybody. Zahn McLarnon as Crow Daddy was, he's in Bone Tomahawk as a professor. Sorry. Yeah. I don't even have Grandpa Flick on here.
Wow.
And Emily Eileen Lind. Oh, that's funny. Rebecca Ferguson played Jenny Lind in Greatest Showman, and this girl's name is actually Lind as her last name. Weird. As Snakebite Andy, she was also in The Babysitter Killer Queen as Melanie.
Dead bitch.
Wow. Damn.
Do you not recall?
Nah, I don't remember what she did.
Oh, okay.
Fuck that bitch.
Fuck that bitch.
Estimated budget of $45 million, only grossing $78.4 million. Like, that's still solid, you know? That's like $33 million. Pretty good, but not as much as I thought this would gross. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Filmed in Mount Hood, Oregon, in Atlanta, Georgia. You can watch this on Amazon Fort on $3.99 rental. I don't know why I said Fort. It should be four. Movies that came out around the same time, not that much. Really not that much. Charlie's Angels, Ford vs. Ferrari, Frozen 2, Knives Out, Underwater, and Jumanji Next Level. We've seen all of those except for Frozen 2.
No, I've seen Frozen 2.
You've seen Frozen 2?
Yeah, and...
when did you watch that?
I think we might have watched it on Disney.
We were together. We never watched that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched... I didn't watch it when it came out. I'm pretty sure I watched it on Disney Plus later to see what all the, like, hype on that was.
Did you watch the first one?
Yeah, I've seen the first one.
Oh.
I mean, I watched the first one because I didn't, you know, it was before it got, like, wild.
Yeah.
But the second one, I was like, all right, I watched the first one already. And the second one, I'm like, I in no way feel like this film was necessary. Also, Elsa continues to be a sister who only thinks about herself.
You know the fun conspiracy theory about Frozen?
No.
That they made a movie called Frozen, so that way when you Google Disney and Frozen, it doesn't pop up with the...
How Walt Disney
is frozen. And
cryogenically frozen.
Yeah, beneath fucking Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, classic.
Good stuff. IMDb summary. Years following the events of The Shining, 1980, a now adult Dan Torrance must protect a young girl with similar powers from a cult known as the True Knot, who prey on children with powers to remain immortal.
Mm.
That's a great description. Michael mentioned it on our Gerald's Game episode, and I want to reiterate it now. I think it's impressive that Mike Flanagan is not only able to make a good adaptation. Actually, no. Back up. Not only make a fucking fantastic movie,
yeah,
without even being related to the book, make a good adaptation, and somehow make it a canon fucking sequel to the book, to the Shining movie, which is completely not like the book. So
we have previously described the Shining movie as someone said, so there's this family in this haunted hotel, and Stanley Kubrick went,
enough.
That's all I needed.
That's it. So it's impressive that he did all three of those things. Like, I don't even understand how that's possible. And that's why this movie has the rating it does for me.
Yeah.
It's very impressive, and I think that's why this movie works so well. It's one of our favorites. I'm pretty sure it was actually our favorite of 2019, if I'm not mistaken. I did have a question. Did we ever get an explanation for why Abra contact? Like, I don't remember.
So,
how they got into contact with each other?
It was more like a psychic connection thing. However, in the book itself... is why there's an actual explanation. I think it was just too difficult to make that really work on screen, because in reality, Jack Torrance cheated on Wendy, and the woman he cheated with had a daughter, and that daughter is Abra's mom. So it's actually Danny's half-sister.
That's in the book?
Yeah, in the book.
Dr. Sleep?
Yes.
Really?
Which is funny because I haven't read it and you have.
Oh, I mean, I listened to the audiobook before we did an episode. I think
that weird period of time where we were listening to a shit ton of audiobooks.
Yeah, I miss those days. Yeah, I mean, no, the book, that's what I'm saying. Like, he did a great adaptation of the book.
Yeah, it was just going to be too hard to kind of get into that whole, Abra's mom is Danny's half-sister. Abra is actually his niece.
Twin powers, unite.
Which is exactly why it's funny that it's kind of a nod to that when she's like, just say you're my Uncle Dan, because in reality, he is her Uncle Dan.
True, okay.
Yeah, so that's supposed to be how they have a connection.
Okay, well then that makes sense. They don't really explain that in the movie.
Yeah, I think it would have taken too much time to go into all that.
Yeah, and with a movie that's already 3 fucking hours, I'm that's enough.
Yeah.
Although this is one of the few movies where I'm like, it doesn't need to be shorter because everything, even the 2.5 hour one, I'm like, it's still a great movie, but I prefer the 3 hour one, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It gives more, it's not necessary exposition, but it's nice to have.
And it is nice to have.
It doesn't feel like it's dragging out. You just feel like you're getting more in depth with the character. That's why I think it's not one of those extended cuts where you're like, okay, so we're just tacking in random scenes. It's just, most of them are seriously, the extended scenes are just kind of wedged into the scenes that are already happening. Yeah. Like, someone will say a line originally, someone responds this way, but they actually have a back and forth conversation in the middle of that Mike seamlessly slips back in like it wasn't gone. So I think that's why it works.
Does work very well. Speaking of the differences and cuts, let me tell you about it.
People, let me tell you.
So I looked up an article on it just so that way I knew exactly and I wasn't just guessing. One of these, though, I don't remember at all. So you can tell me about that.
Will do.
So the violet scene at the beginning is extended quite a bit, and it actually shows her. It shows this like more implying that she got killed. Because it's very heavily hinted in the theatrical cut, but it's very heavily implied in the director's cut that she, like, they're killing her.
Yeah.
Especially when her mom comes looking for her and she's like Violet, and you can see the car driving off in the background. You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Kid's a goner.
I don't remember seeing that either. Did I black out for that?
What?
That whole scene?
What whole scene? It's the Violet scene. It's the first scene.
Yeah, I don't think I noticed the vehicle driving off the background.
Yeah, you can see one of the RVs driving off in the background.
It's not my fault. Mike Flanagan put so much shit in the background. I can't look at everything. It's like watching Haunting of Hill House.
Where are the ghosts?
Playing the Where's Waldo of ghosts. You're like, are these people speaking? Shut up, I'm looking for ghosts.
Wow. The director's cut is split into 6 chapters, so you can kind of get a sense at where you're at in the movie, which I love because I'm like, all right, chapter 4, we've got 2 left. Cool. We're like,
yeah.
2-something hours in. We get more scenes or an extended version of the Dick Halloran and young Danny conversation they have, because that's like, I swear, it's like an 8-minute conversation that they have in the director's cut. So yeah, you get more of that.
Yeah, they really go more into depth about what's going to happen with Danny and what he needs to do to protect himself and the realities of his situation, which I think is good.
Yes, you get more of Abra discovering her powers. I can't tell you exactly which parts those are, but she goes into more detail on that. You get an extended baseball boy scene with I think that all the blood is what they added, because Flanagan said that this is the director's cut is a more polished version with better effects and more blood, so I'm pretty sure that falls into the more blood. The earthquake on Abra's street,
so at one point Crow Daddy mentions that to Rose. It was like a conversation they had where she's like trying to meditate and she basically tells him to fuck off, and he's like, but what about this teeny earthquake?
Okay. I was looking for a scene. I wasn't paying.
It was a conversation, yeah.
Okay. That, and then you get more of Dan and Jack, that one scene when they're talking, that's extended as well. So there's like 3 or 4 key scenes that are extended by a few minutes, and then, you know, just other shit as well.
Well, that's why, like I'm saying, there, it's not like he just dropped in a shit ton of random scenes.
No.
It's like he seamlessly blended them in with what was already happening.
Yep.
Just to make it feel like a more substantial film.
Yeah, plus I don't, I mean, would I still have gone to see it at the theaters? Yes, but not everyone's going to go, oh, let me go see that 3-hour movie at the theater.
That's fair.
My overall thoughts on this movie is a perfect adaptation to the book and sequel to The Shining movie. That's my overall thoughts. Perfect. What about you?
Perfect, perfect, perfect. No, I think this is an excellent blend. I know that he had even, I think at one point said to Stephen King, like, hey, I know you weren't as big a fan of the Stanley Kubrick one, but we can't ignore it. That's what people know.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job taking both. It was a perfect marriage of the two. So you really got to enjoy the stuff about the novel. But, and I say this lovingly, take out all the crap you really don't need in some Stephen King novels. Yeah. Sometimes there's extra.
There's a lot extra.
And
I feel like The Shining was pretty concise, though.
Really? The snake hose scene? That felt, and the wasps in the bowl, and the hedge maze monsters, and...
Are you kidding me? That's like my favorite part of The Shining TV series, is the fun. We actually get to see the hedge, like, monsters. Those are awesome.
I still think those are silly, but okay.
So cool.
I think it was a really good way. Mike Flanagan definitely knows how to take what's important about written works and bring them to life. Like, he did the same shit in Fall of House of Usher.
We did the same shit in Gerald's Game. He's very good at, like, adaptations.
Yeah. What? How do I get this exact story across, but make it
visual,
concise?
Yeah, yeah. Make it visual instead of auditory.
But don't miss the emotional and mental beats. Yeah.
God bless you, Mike Flanagan.
When you do your little snippets, could you tag him in these?
Tag him in what?
You don't put the TikTok snippets up no more?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, tag his ass in it.
I should have been tagging him in all of these, son of a bitch.
Just if you're listening, Mr. Flanagan.
I really wanted to go see him when he was at Horror Hound, because he's going to be at Horror Hound on my birthday, and I could be like, you know what's funny? We're doing an entire month of your movies. That's how much we like you. Please be on our show.
Mr. Flanagan.
Please be on our show. Can you and Kate just like take an hour, please?
If you want to direct Dust Bunnies, I'm okay with it.
Oh my God. We'll pay you in crisp high fives and some good Italian pizza that we have next door. Yeah. And maybe some Coke Zeros if you're feeling feisty.
If you're
feisty.
A Coke Zero fan, you could have Coke Zero at our house Coke Zero, anytime.
Mini
yeah.
sodas. I mean,
bring your wife with you. We like her too.
She can star.
Yes, exactly.
She can star.
She can be whichever Dust Bunny she wants.
We need an actor. You said we needed an actor. That would be perfect. Kate Siegel.
Yes, but based on that script, do we really think it's a woman?
We could shoot it in a day if we had Mike Flanagan. He'd be like, cut, good night. That's it.
It has to be filmed at night. Did you read the script?
Yeah, that's why I said good night.
Okay.
Anyways, overall thoughts. I already did that. We got to go to likes now. I mean, what don't I like about this movie?
Do you want to go first?
I usually do, but you can if you want.
No, go ahead.
So I really enjoyed how it started out with the same song as The Shining for a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's all I liked. But you get a really.
The rest of the film's fine after that, but yeah, I kind of checked out.
The next 2 hours and 59 fucking minutes are okay. No, I love that it opens with the same song from The Shining. You get a nice aerial shot that kind of zooms in or, you know, pans down or fucking whatever you call it. And it's a really nice shot. The cold open, too, if you want to call it that, with Violet is fantastic. And it's if you don't know anything about this movie and you go in, you're like, holy shit, what? You choke to death. Because you're so excited about what's to come.
That's good.
No, but if you don't know anything about any of this shit, I mean, ideally you would have at least seen The Shining. But if you don't know about Dr. Sleep or anything like that, and you go into this movie and you see the cold open with Rebecca Ferguson and Violet McGraw and all the friends she has in the background, it should pique your curiosity immediately. Because you're like, what are these people doing to this poor child? Why does she have all these friends in the background? And she's like, why does she say, she mentioned something about the, it's like the young ones are always something, I think, to her.
No, so she's talking about flowers and says something about the colorful ones are always the like tastiest or something like that. Basically, it's just like really talking about the girl. It also establishes like immediately that these are the bad guys. They are not bad guys with morals. They are just, they will hurt anybody, even an innocent little girl.
Especially the way, well, especially you from the, and you can get that from how that she's grabbed, like Violet's grabbed, like she, like Rebecca Ferguson grabs her arm and holds on, and like her, and Violet's like, I should probably get back to my mom now. So you know right then and there, you're like, wow, they're doing something to this poor child. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, they swarm like sharks.
Yeah, then you get that great aerial shot of them all just swarming towards her. So that's a good scene. I love the flashbacks. The flashbacks are some of my favorite parts of this movie. Like Danny riding his bike past room 237 and seeing the gross lady ghost. Wendy and Danny together, amazing. The actress who played Wendy does like a perfect Wendy when she's running and she's like, Danny! I was like, oh my God. It's like, how did you tap into that so well?
Yeah.
The conversation between Danny and Dick is also... so engrossing. Like they have a lot of good dialogue in this movie. Usually, you know, if you like Quentin Tarantino, you know you like good dialogue. Mike Flanagan can do the same thing. He can really engross you in a conversation, not just by what they're saying, but how he's shooting it. Like the angles of that shot on the bench are just so good. I think it's really cool how Dick never really left Doc. You know, or Doc. I mean, that's what his nickname is. But Dan,
Dick Doc.
He never left Dan, and he still kind of watches over him in a sense. And it's a really cool kind of how Danny takes the place of Dick for Abra, which is great because then he's kind of watching over Abra because he dies at the end of this movie. And he's...
Spoilers.
We're going into spoilers.
Oh, okay.
We always do. Spoilers are always on the table now. So, yeah, it's kind of fun how Dan takes that spot for Abra, and he's like his... He's like her... You know, little Holy Ghost, if you want to call it that. Not Holy Ghost, but you know.
Guardian Angel might make more sense.
That's what I was going for. Yeah. I don't know why I went Holy Ghost.
He's God.
Billy is also just so genuinely nice, and I like how he takes a chance on Danny. Just like, I don't know, he's so nice. Flanagan tilt. Boom. When Andy takes her first inhale of the canister, you get the fucking Flanagan tilt. Love that goddamn shot. Let's see here a couple more things. Oh, the 217 homage to when Dan is working at the hospital, when you see room 217, that's fun.
Yep.
I also love how fucking genuinely wholesome this movie can be at times, like when Dan is comforting the dying patients and like putting their mind at ease. Like this movie is actually super fucking like genuine at times. It's not just a horror movie. There's like some really good emotional connections that you can. What is happening?
There's a truck driving by.
Oh, I thought it was the air show again.
No, they just, I don't think it happened twice a year.
Let's see some other stuff here. Oh, the fact that Mike Flanagan actually built some of the sets with blueprints from the Kubrick estate for this movie. Fucking awesome. That's why it looks exactly the same. I don't know if some of the sets are still there, but, you know, it's nice that he built some. Also,
the sets for The Shining burned down.
Oh, that's right. So then he did build all of that.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds like a lot of work. I think my favorite part about this movie, though, is the whole hierarchy for how the steam works and how, like, what people with powers can do. You've got people that can push people, like from Firestarter.
Yeah.
You've got people that can, you know, read people's minds. They can, like, kind of like astral project and stuff like that. It's not really explained.
Just know things.
Yeah, or just know things. It's fascinating and how some people like to ride around in a group and kill people that shine to steal their steam and live forever. Okay. Most people probably don't do that. I'd like to say the most people with the shine don't even know that that's a thing. And then they come across the true knot and they're like, wow, that's fucking crazy.
Yep.
That's sadistic as shit. And let me drop my phone there real quick. Okay, good. Did that. And that's pretty much all I have for likes. What about you?
Gee, what's left after that?
Sorry.
What, do you have a laundry list over there?
Sorry, it was a 3-hour movie, man.
No, I think Rose the Hat, Rebecca Ferguson, is an amazing villain. I really appreciate that she's not like a twirl the mustache, like, haha, I'm going to do evil kind of villain. She is a person who lives a way of life and feels entirely justified. She doesn't even question that this is the hierarchy, and this is what she is able to do, so she should do it and can do it, and doesn't think twice about it. It is just who she is, and I like that kind of villain, because there's people who are like, oh, I'm going to do evil to do evil, and then this is just her being.
It's who she is. She doesn't know any other way.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
And it's not even like, maybe she was just done. This is her personality. This is just who she is.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. I really liked watching the fact that Danny ends up going down the same road as his dad with the alcoholism, and he is able to overcome it. And the speech about him, how his dad had wanted to do that. And unfortunately, Overlook really took that away from him and like manipulated him.
Yeah. Wholesome moment. Another wholesome, just genuine moment.
And I think it's really interesting that I know Mike Flanagan and Kate Siegel, I believe. Mike Flanagan had dealt with his own sobriety issues. And he, in fact... said that this was one of the reasons he got sober, because of having to reflect on that sobriety journey for Danny that actually impacted his own sobriety, which is amazing. But yeah, I really like how you get to see how the trauma impacted Danny and even Wendy, like the added scenes of her kind of staring at him at times.
Yeah.
And that you find out that the reason she would do that was because she would see her husband and how sad that is. Honestly, I think Wendy gets such a bad rap of just being like a manic crybaby kind of character. And she's not. She's a poor woman who's trying to keep her family together.
Yeah.
And when her son's in danger, she fights like hell to make sure he survives. But she's just a woman who's desperately trying to keep her family from falling apart. And that'll make anyone go a little crazy.
Don't ever come at me with that stupid fucking Wendy theory, anybody.
Never.
Never.
It's so dumb.
You want to have a good fucking time and laugh? Go watch the Wendy theory on YouTube. It's the most asinine piece of shit I've ever seen. Someone hates women and really hates Wendy. It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I usually don't shit on stuff like that, but God, that made me so mad. I was like, these are the loosest fucking... like connections you're making, pal.
Like it's funny to me as a third party. You can always be like, oh well, I wouldn't even do that, this or that. Like, bro, what's she supposed to be doing? What would you like her to do? She's doing the best she can. She's trying to keep the peace. She's trying to get through this tough time, and it's going poorly. She's doing the best she can.
Yeah, it's Wendy's hallucinations for some reason instead of Jack's.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Anyways,
but no, I really like how they get into the characters feel real. And I really enjoy Abra too. That actress does excellent, because not only is she playing herself, but at one point she's playing Dan projected into her body, and it feels like someone else talking.
Feels like him talking.
She's very talented. And Abra, I remember when we watched the movie originally, and I thought, wow, Abra's a really interesting character. She's not scared of her powers. She's not, I need to run away. She's like, no, I have these abilities, and what these people are doing are wrong, and I may be a child, but I'm not standing for it. I love it. Love to see a strong woman going, nah, I've got the power. Let's go.
I have the power.
A lot of strong females in this, and by lot, I mean... 2 to 3-ish.
Three, definitely. Andy, Rose the Hat, and Abra. At least.
Yeah.
So. Dislikes. I got nothing for dislikes. Get fucked. I don't know why I said that, but yeah.
Ditto. No.
Hot takes. This is as good as The Shining. That's my hot take.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I was hooked at the cold open. I don't know about you. It did not take very much time for me to be like, yep, I'm in. I was immediately hooked.
Considering that every time we watch The Shining prior to this, and the song opening starts, we're pretty much like, okay, everybody shut the fuck up. It's about to do the music.
It's about to do the, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. I made a couple friends of mine sit in the car while I loudly blasted that.
Oh, I know. You told me.
Well, people on the podcast don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Disrespect. So that is easily the first time I know I watched The Shining, I was like, oh, what is this?
You're sold by the music, right?
I was hooked in immediately, like, let's go. They're doing it right. I can already tell.
Yeah. I was never lost at this point. And at this point, I was never lost at any point during the movie. Solid from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Perfect. Perfect movie.
Perfect.
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 Perfectly splendid. Horror moment for me is the partial degloving when Abra goes into Rose's mind. Oh my God, what is it with Flanagan and degloving? That's the second movie we've talked about this month that has degloving.
Yeah.
Fucking you sadistic fuck. How dare you do that to me twice?
Yeah.
Not as bad as Gerald's Game, but still like, oh God.
Yeah, that's fair. That scene really stresses me out.
What about you, horror moment?
That one, I can't even watch the screen for that one. And I'm like, nope, tell me when it's over. I'm not looking for that.
Favorite kill is going to be the same for... I know that... okay, so like this is going to be the same for the next three things here. Kill is Baseball Boy.
Yeah, not that we're happy about it, but the intensity of the scene is amazing.
And how he did that so well that people like were legitimately... like or Rebecca Ferguson was like, are you okay? And he's like, yep. And like hops up and goes and grabs a soda. And everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like everyone was like emotionally scarred from doing that scene except for him. He was like, I'm good.
Justin Tremblay?
Yeah. No, Jacob.
Jacob Tremblay. Yeah. He did
Jacob
great.
Tremblay. Both of our favorite characters is Rose the Hat.
Absolutely.
He's one of the most interesting villains in cinema history. That's another hot take. How about that? She's one of the most interesting villains like in the history of cinema.
I tried to Google her and apparently there is no backstory. I would watch that movie.
Just Rose the Hat. Yeah. How you came to be. I didn't have a least favorite character, even though like the entire True Knot are all kind of pieces of shit. I did not have a least favorite character. Everyone has some likable qualities to them.
Yeah.
Because even the True Knot, as terrible as they are killing children, they actually have this nice sense of family, and mm-hmm. it's like so fucking wholesome. Again, this movie is so wholesome for no reason at all. Favorite line, I finally had a favorite line. Eat well, stay young, and live long. Great line.
That's a good line. Yeah. Yeah.
What about you?
I don't know that I have a specific favorite line, though I do like it stands to reason you wouldn't wear a seatbelt. Gadoosh.
That was good.
Yeah, it is just like the whole chitter chatter. I do
it. Chitter chatter? Was that what
Yeah, just the chitter chatter. Basically, Dan just kind of rambling for a few minutes. And the whole, like, I feel hungover. And he's like, yeah, that's good shit. And he's Dan's projected into Abra. And he's like, yeah, I haven't been hungover in years. And Crowdad, he's like, what?
Do what? You're
just the kind of side eye, like, what the fuck are you talking
about? You're a child.
Years. Like, yeah, that whole conversation is great, but it's like, oh yeah, if you think you're going to live forever, it'd stand to reason you wouldn't wear the seatbelt. Crashes Deuce. Car, goes flying. Like, oh God, that's amazing.
Yeah, he gets fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
Yeah, that and maybe the they're starving when lets Rose the Hat know exactly what's in all the little boxes in his mind.
She walks right into that trap. It's so fucking goddamn great. She just strolls in like, I own this place. And then he's like, nah, bitch, I've got like 17 ghosts and they're all very hungry. And then she gets ripped to pieces. Amazing.
Yeah.
Great scene.
Like, you don't know.
You don't know
you
shit.
You think you know, you don't know.
Yeah. Again, someone who thinks they're going to live forever would strut around like that.
Yep.
Performances, everyone's fucking amazing. Definitely a big shout out to the lady who played Abra because she's fucking great. And Rose the Hat, Rebecca Ferguson, fucking amazing. Cinematography, it's Flanagan, it's perfect. I love everything about this movie, even down to the score. You know, the cues vibe just like The Shining, the heartbeat vibes just like The Shining. Everything is like everything auditorially.
Yes.
Yeah, is like homage to The Shining, and it's just like steeped in The Shining. It's great.
You actually made me think of a really important moment because we were talking about the whole thing with Dan getting his sobriety when Jack didn't. That is something that they did a really interesting parallel to, because when Dan gets his job, like he's initially trying to get sober and gets a job, he interviews with a man in an office for a night, like, night janitor orderly, and the office is made to look like an exact replica of the manager's office from the Overlook. And that's interesting because Jack was in that interview and that was supposed to be Jack's second chance with his family and second chance with sobriety and all that. And where Jack failed, that's where Dan got his moment to really fix his life, and he succeeded. But it's interesting that it really all starts with the interview they had for a job.
Completely different outcomes.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see how Mike Flanagan did those parallels there. Because if you didn't really watch The Shining, you haven't seen it enough, you wouldn't have recognized that office off the bat or seen that parallel.
No. So speaking on that, though, what you just said, I had something, and then it just went phew out. Oh, I like how that in the book, the Shining, the Overlook explodes, right? Gets sets on fire, explodes. We don't get that in the movie at all.
Technically, the Overlook was on fire by the end, but well, that wasn't on camera.
Yeah, so you don't really get that. And then what does Mike Flanagan do for us? He gives us the ending that we all want with the Overlook on fire. Like, God, how did you do this? How did you manage to do this? Because that's exactly what I wanted. Because it explodes in the miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it exploded in Dr. Sleep, but you at least get it all decrepit, dilapidated, and on fire. And I was like, wow, you took the original ending to The Shining and somehow fucking shoehorned it into Dr. Sleep. You goddamn brilliant bastard.
Yeah, I'm saying it is a little funny that the sets of The Shining actually did burn down. Like, yeah. It's going down one way or the other.
It's going down, whether you do it in the movie or we do it not in the movie.
I will burn this place to the ground.
I will rain hellfire upon you. I'm talking scorched earth, motherfucker. I will massacre you. Anyways, anything else you'd like to say on The Shining before we move on here? Or Dr. Sleep.
Whatever we're reviewing. No.
All right, some trivia here. You already said that one. That's fun. The office being the same. I already said that one, so that's even more fun. Rose the Hat exchanging flowers with the little girl by a riverbank is homage to an iconic scene of the little girl giving flowers to the monster by the river in Frankenstein. In both cases, it does not end well for the girl. Dr. Sleep explores that not only humans shine, but animals can shine too. The cat shines, Azrael, as it can be determined, or as it can determine when people are about to die. And I really like that aspect of the movie. Rose describes Andy's powers, Snakebite Andy's powers, as pushing, just like Andy McGee in Firestarter. So it's kind of like, you know, kind of like the same ability. He can push people, she can push people. It's pretty cool. So that's it for that. Rated 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Has a certified fresh rating of 78% on the tomato meter and an 89% audience score. I gave this a 5 out of 5.
Do you really have to ask what I gave it?
You have to tell.
It's 5.
So that makes this a Frightmare certified slap. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have Oculus, The Haunting of Hill House, 1408, The Ring, and It. Similar movies according to IMDb, we have The Shining, It Chapter 2, Gerald's Game, The Invisible Man, and It. Funny reviews, go!
Okay, Jack, that's the reviewer on here. 4 stars. If you catch Rebecca Ferguson feeding on my shine, do not prosecute her. She caught me slipping.
Oh, damn, that was one of mine, you son of a bitch.
Angela.
Hey.
I thought I was supposed to do all mine.
No, I go next.
Go ahead.
Let's see. I have 3.5 stars from Lauren. The only way I'll ever accept death is a visit from Ewan McGregor and his cat. Facts.
3.5 stars from Angela Fergado. Never follow a hippie to a second location.
3.5 stars from Patrick Williams. This is just a nice wholesome one. Dan Torrance went through a lot, and I'm really glad he got his life together. So wholesome.
On a similar theme from Adam, 3.5 stars. Danny Torrance may have been heavily traumatized, but at least he grew up to be hot.
Good God. 3.5 stars from Kyle Carriger. This was basically Monsters, Inc. Collecting screams. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are
Watson LMP90.
Booyah! Come join us next week as we close out March Flanagan with me and Corey reviewing Ouija, Origin of Evil.
Yay! I'm going to watch that one with you too, right?
Hell yeah. So until next week, stay tuned and
stay spooky.